ఆకర్ణ్యాత్మజం ఆయంతం సంపరిత్యాయథాగతం రాజాన శ్రద్ధదే భద్రం ఆభద్రస్య కుతో మమ. ఆకర్ణ్య హేవింగ్ హెడ్ ఆత్మజం హిస్ సన్ ఆయంతం కమింగ్ బ్యాక్ సంపరిత్య ఆఫ్టర్ డైయింగ్ యథా ఎజ్ ఇఫ్ ఆగతం కమింగ్ బ్యాక్ రాజా కింగ్ ఉతనపాద్ న డిడ్ నాట్ శ్రద్ధదే హ్యావ్ ఎనీ కాన్ఫిడెన్స్ భద్రం గుడ్ ఫోర్చ్యూన్ ఆభద్రస్య ఆఫ్ ద ఇంపైర్స్ కుతా వెన్స్ మమ మైన్ ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ అండ్ ప్రిపోర్ట్ బై హిస్ డివైన్ గ్రేస్ రూపాకి. When King Uttanapad heard that his son Dhruva was coming back home, as if coming back to life after that death, he could not put his faith in this message, for he was doubtful of how it could happen. He considered himself the most wretched, and therefore he thought that it was not possible for him to attain such good fortune. Purport. Dhruva Maharaj, a 5-year-old boy, went to the forest for penance and austerity, and the king could not at all believe that a small boy of such a tender age could live in the forest. He was certain that Dhruva was dead. He therefore could not fix his faith in the message that Dhruva Maharaj was coming back home again. For him, the message said that a dead man was coming back home, and so he could not believe it. After Dhruva Maharaj's departure from home, King Uttanapad thought that he was the cause of Dhruva's leaving, and thus he considered himself the most wretched. Therefore, even though it was possible that his lost son was coming back home from the kingdom of death, he thought that since he was most sinful, it was not possible for him to be so fortunate as to get back his lost son. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta స్వామీనితి నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతే దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్యదేశతారిణే జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార్ శ్రీవాషది గౌరభక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ. సో వి కంటిన్యూ టు సీ ద ధ్రువ మహారాజ్ పాస్ టైమ్ అన్ఫోల్డ్ ఇన్ ద శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం. దే ఆర్ అట్లీస్ట్ మే బిఫోర్ 5 చాప్టర్స్ that talks about the glorious pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. So far, we have seen that Dhruva Maharaj being heavily... Is this okay? Or is it falling? As Chaitanya Charan Prabhu said, you know, this microphone stand is so humble. It keeps falling. Thank you. Much better, no? Even if it falls, there's still some space. So I was saying that so far we have seen that Dhruva Maharaj being heavily insulted by his stepmother Suruchi feels very aggrieved and disheartened and decides to take revenge. Being a Kshatriya, Dhruva Maharaj was from a Kshatriya dynasty. So being a Kshatriya, you know, he's, as we say, you know, in layman's term, his blood was boiling because he was so heavily insulted and chastised by the thunderbolt words, abusive words of his stepmother. When Dhruva Maharaj was trying to climb on the lap of his father, Uttanapad. As we know from past times now, Uttanapad had two wives, Suniti and Surichi. Dhruva was born from Suniti, and Uttama was born from Surichi. So Surichi, because she was dear to the king, Uttanapad, she became very proud and envious. In that kind of notorious mood of being very pride, being very proud, you know, she chastised Dhruva Maharaj when he was attempting to sit on the lap of his father, which is natural for a child to do, for a 5-year child to do. So Dhruva Maharaj, of course, you know, boiling with his anger, decided to take revenge at the age of 5 years old only. And fortunately, he got good counseling from his mother, Suniti, and also from Narad Muni, who directed his anger into Krishna consciousness. His anger was channelized into Krishna consciousness, to the path of bhakti, devotional service. Now, so what we are seeing now is that Dhruva Maharaj, once he took to the path of devotional service, the mantra that was given to him by his spiritual master Narad Muni was Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So he was chanting this mantra. And notwithstanding that he undertook to devotional service with an adulterated motive, you know, his motive was his goal was motivated, you know, by taking revenge against his stepmother, for that matter, even against his father. He wanted a palace that was, you know, more opulent than not only his father and not only his grandfather, but, you know, something that was even more opulent than Lord, than Brahmaji himself. He wanted that kind of opulence to show the world, you know, that I'm also made up of something. This kind of attitude we also sometimes have in our heart, you know, to show that we are also made up of something. So that's the revengeful mood that Dhruva had. Now, thank God, because you took to the path of devotional service, akama sarvo kamova, you know, whether we have got adulterated motive or unadulterated motive, Srimad Bhagavatam recommends us that we take to the path of devotional service, which is what Dhruva Maharaj took. So through the process of devotional service, we saw that Dhruva Maharaj went through the 9 stages of devotional service, which starts from Shraddha to Prema. So we see from the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj, so even if we have got, you know, adulterated motive of coming to the Lord, devotional service can purify us. Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita that 4 types of people approach him. No? Arthati, Artho, Jignyasu, and Jnani. And Dhruva Maharaj approached the Lord as being an Arthati, you know, the wealth seeker who wanted opulence, you know, who wanted a palace, very, very opulent palace. So with that desire, when he approached the Lord also purified him. So devotional service has got we can put it in 3 categories of the benefits of devotional service. It gives us purification, it gives us satisfaction, and it gives us illumination. When the sages of Naimisharanya ask Suta Goswami at the beginning of Bhagavatam, you know, that what is the absolute and ultimate benefit for all humanity? What is the absolute and ultimate benefit for all humanity? Suta Goswami responds that it is bhakti. And then he lists the 9 stages of bhakti from Shraddha to Prema. And then he elaborates, you know, that anartha nivritti stage, which is the cleansing of our heart, you know, is when the purification happens. Now, for us as sadhakas, you know, generally getting to the anartha nivritti stage is the hardest bit, you know. That is the, if you like, you know, the summit of the mountain. Then after that, it's all rolling hills. But climbing to that level is hard, you know, when all the defects in the heart is fully, you know, purified. Or not fully, but largely purified. So that's anartha nivritti. And who cleanses our heart? Suta Goswami explains that it is the Lord Himself. Srinivatam Swakatha Krishna ಪುಣ್ಯ ಸರ್ವನ ಕೀರ್ತನ ಹೃದಯ ಅಂತೋ ಇಸ್ತೋ ಹಿ ಅಭದ್ರಾಣಿ, ಹೃದಯ ಅಂತೋ ಇಸ್ತೋ ಏನೋ ಆಲ್ ದ ಅಭದ್ರಾಣಿ ಎನ್ ವಿ ಸಿ ದ ವರ್ಡ್ ಅಭದ್ರಾಣಿ ಟುಡೇ ಅಗೇನ್ ಯು ನೋ ದ ಭದ್ರ ಇನ್ ದ ಅಭದ್ರ ಸೊ ಆಲ್ ದ ಡಿಫೆಕ್ಟ್ಸ್ ದಟ್ಸ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಹಾರ್ಟ್ ದ ಲೋರ್ಡ್ ಹಿಮ್ಸೆಲ್ಫ್ ಕ್ಲೆನ್ಸಸ್ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಹಿ ಇಸ್ ಸುಹೃತ್ ಸತಂ. ಹೃದಯ ಅಂತೋ ಇಸ್ತೋ ಹಿ ಅಭದ್ರಾಣಿ ವಿಧೋನೋತಿ ಸುಹೃತ್ ಸತಂ. ದ ಲೋರ್ಡ್ ಬಿಂಗ್ ದ ಅಲ್ಟಿಮೇಟ್ ಬೆನಿಫೆಕ್ಟರ್ ರಿಸೈಡಿಂಗ್ ಇನ್ ಅವರ್ ಹಾರ್ಟ್ ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟ್ಸ್ ಕ್ಲೀನಿಂಗ್ ಅವರ್ ಹಾರ್ಟ್ ವೆನ್ ವಿ ಚಂಟ್ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. And when the heart is purified to some extent, then the purification leads to satisfaction. We start getting ruchi. Ruchi means taste. We start getting some bliss in bhakti, some joy. We also get joy from bhakti at any point in time, but generally, you know, there is moments in bhakti and there is momentum in bhakti. We get moments of happiness. But to have momentum of happiness, you know, everlasting happiness, continuous happiness, it takes some effort. So purification then leads to satisfaction, the joy of performing bhakti. And that satisfaction then pushes us forward to the point of illumination, which is bhava and prema. Bhava, stage of bhakti, is like the sun rays. You know, and prema is like the sun itself. You know, so there is illumination in the sun. So we have got this, no, some aspect of this realization probably in our own selves as well, you know, that how bhakti leads us to purification, satisfaction and illumination. Philip Prabhu is contributing. Thank you. So here what we are seeing that Dhruva Maharaj, after being purified, no, after being satisfied with what the Lord had benedicted him, after being illuminated by the Lord, after getting his darshan, he is returning home. So Dhruva Maharaj had left the palace of his father in pursuit for, you know, a palace that was more opulent than his father, and then he was meditating in the forest. Initially he went to the forest, then eventually he meditated at the banks of the river Yamuna, you know, in Madhuvan. That's where he did his meditation. So he took the darshan of the Lord there. So now, after getting the darshan of the Lord, Dhruva Maharaj is preparing to return home. And at this juncture, which is the verse for the day, his father Uttanapad is not believing that my son is returning home. Dhruva Maharaj was away from home for good 6 months. No, he attained perfection in 6 months of intense meditation. In these 6 months, initially, when Dhruva Maharaj had left his home, his father, after getting the realization that it was completely his mistake, he was quite despondent. You know, that I am the wretched person who has done this mistake. I shouldn't have been so harsh with my son. So he gets that realization. And then at that point in time, Narad Muni, when he reaches Uttanapad and tells him that, don't worry, your son is embarking on a journey that will be very glorious, that will produce very glorious results. So don't worry about him at all. Don't worry, be happy. As we say in Ozi, don't worry, mate. So Narad Muni told him, don't worry, mate. Your son will come back. So fast forward 6 months. Now at this point, when Uttanapad is getting the message that Dhruva Maharaj is returning, he is not having faith in the message that is delivered to him that my son is actually returning home. How can a 5-year-old son survive in the forest all alone for 6 months? He is not having the faith that his son is actually returning. And he is almost rhetorically asking the question of how can such a great fortune fall upon this wretched guy? So if you look at the verse again, when King Uttanapad heard that his son Dhruva was coming back home, as if coming back from life after death, he could not put his faith in this message, for he was doubtful of how could such thing happen. He considered himself the most wretched, and therefore he thought that it was not possible for him to attain such good fortune. This chapter itself is titled Dhruva Maharaj Returns Home. So this aspect of returning home can be analyzed from different perceptions. Now, we might have different perceptions about retaining home. And some of us are Indian bodied background, you know, so we have got this own experience of being confused where is actually our home. Even on a material platform, forget about the spiritual platform. No. We got also very excited when we were migrating to Melbourne. When the news came that we are going to Melbourne, you know, that we were also so significantly excited that we are living for the greener pastures, you know, and we'll have, you know, our own job and our own home and our own car and everything in Melbourne, you know, one of the most livable cities in the world, especially, you know, modern media. But then, you know, when the time came, all the excitement was building up until the time of when we were about to depart. Now, that mere realization that came that, you know, this home where I have lived for most of my life, you know, all the cousins and friends that we have played, you know, in the, what do you call it, the laneway? Gully. You know, all this playing of, you know, kabaddi and cricket in the gully, you know, eating of all this bhelpuri and all those things, you know, in the halwa shop, you know, all this is coming to a cessation now, you know. Now, all the hot roti and sabji from, you know, the hands of my mother, you know, all these things are going to come to a cessation, and I'm going to a place when things will only be takeaways. And bread, you know, and salad and bread and sandwich in the morning. No more hot, you know, khichdi. Thanks to Melbourne Temple, at least we get khichdi on Saturdays and Sundays. Other than that, it is generally bread. So that realization of leaving home then, you know, overwhelmed us, and tears started flowing from the eyes to say maybe this is not the right thing to do. But in looking for the greener pastures and, you know, and better lifestyle, excuse me, we left that home, the place that we called home, and came to Melbourne or Sydney or wherever and started renting here. It took us some time to figure out whether this is our home or that was our home. No. We were bewildered. Which place is our real home? No. The termination of the home in India and the beginning of the new home in Melbourne was very confusing. So nowadays, you know, when we go back home, after a few years being abroad, we still are confused, you know, whether that is our home, we stay there for 3 months, or Melbourne is our home, we come back quickly. No. Mind is very, very bewildered. So similarly, when Dhruva Maharaj is returning home, we can look at this home from different perspectives. Srila Prabhupada tells us that our real home is in Krishna consciousness. Back to home, back to Godhead. But foolishly we think that our two-bedroom apartment in Albert Park or Middle Park, you know, where we spend rest of our, you know, or most of our time trying to make that a very, very conducive place for us to live happily, is actually our real home. But that is being an illusion. Real home is back to home, back to Godhead with Krishna. So our perspective of home can immediately change when we are in Krishna consciousness. This agony of leaving a home can be very tormenting to anybody. Now this agony is actually manifold multiplied when death comes. If you think of it, no? When we are leaving home, it's quite painful. Just imagine the pain that a soul has to go through when it is leaving not just the home, but everything that it is linked with. No? And that is called death. Leaving the family, leaving the house, leaving the car, leaving the pet dog, leaving the food, leaving the people, leaving the clothes. Everything is left behind at the moment of death. And how much more agonizing that can be if just a mere fact of leaving our own home is so painful. However, for a devotee, Srila Prabhupada explains that leaving home or death is actually not a termination but a transition. Death for a devotee is not a termination, but a transition. It is not that we terminate something, you know, and then that stops, then we restart with something else. No, it is just that, you know, this particular body is given away, and we transit into another spiritual body, if we qualify back to Godhead, then we just transit into a new body, and our Krishna consciousness continues. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and I shared this last time as well. You know, he gives this wonderful analogy of what it means to leave home. You know, how a devotee feels, the devotee's feeling of leaving home versus a non-devotee's feeling of leaving home. And he gives the analogy of a wedding. You know, at the time of wedding, when the girl is leaving the house of his parents, when she's leaving the house of the parents, you know, there's a lot of tears, there's a lot of crying going on. Maybe not these days. But at one time, you know, there was a lot of crying because she was going to somewhere that was unknown, you know, with her husband and leaving the house where she was born and bred. So there was that unfear that was creating, and the separation, of course, that was creating a lot of tears in the girl and also, you know, the girl's family, a lot of crying. Seeing that, the boy also started crying. God knows why. So then, if we fast forward to today, on even Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that if you replace that scene with the scene when the boy and girl knew each other, you know, and they were courting, you know, and then they get married after a few years of courting. So the boy knows the girl very well, and the girl knows the boy very well. And they were already living together somewhere, which happens to be the case these days. You know, the boy and girl are already living together before they get married. Not that, you know, I'm advocating it, but I'm just giving it as an example. So when the boy and girl live together before even getting married, and now when the girl gets married, the tears are not there much more. Why? Because she knows that actually she is going to her home. She's already been in that house for 3 years renting with the boyfriend. So she knows she's just going to the house, to her own home. So the whole concept of home changes now. No? Leaving her parents' home is one thing, but now actually she knows she's going to her real home with her husband where she'll live the rest of her life. So there's not much of, you know, disappointment, sadness at that point in time. So similarly for a devotee, death means just leaving this material home and going back to our real home with Krishna. If we have already developed and established that loving relationship with Krishna, then death only becomes just leaving this temporary two-bedroom house and going into a house that is much more opulent and bigger and living there happily with Krishna. So it's only a transition. Then, if we know that we can change our conception of home from material home to spiritual home, the question that arises is how do we get the qualification to go back home? Just as we had the visa requirements to come to Melbourne, what is the visa requirement to go back to Godhead? To make ourselves eligible to go back to our real home, what we need to do is change the home page of our mind's browser. To change the home page of our mind's browser. What do I mean by that? Now, when we start computer, laptop, it generally opens up with the default home page. That is the page that we have set. And sometimes when we don't want that page, we just close it off, you know, that particular tab, and move on to the page that we want to spend time on. So just as the laptop starts with the default home page, our mind also starts with the default home page. What is that home page that our mind starts with? It is generally the page that we have, that it has memories from the past impressions and the past conditioning. Our mind captures all those past impressions and those past conditioning, and that's the page that it generally tends to go to. As sadhakas, you know, as neophyte devotees, what we have to do under the realm of sadhana bhakti, we have to kind of forcefully or mechanically close those pages that open up in our mind that are anti-Krishna consciousness or non-Krishna consciousness. Close those tabs. And somehow or the other, train the mind to make the default home page as the page of Radha Vallabha. So when our mind thinks of something, you know, it should immediately come, the screen that should come in our page is, you know, that beautiful, adorable Radha Vallabha page, you know, or Gauranitya page, or anything, you know, that is connected with Krishna consciousness. If somehow or the other we can train our mind to be like that, and even if other temptations come, just as we close, you know, the browsers that we don't want, we have to continuously keep closing those browsers. And when the mind is fully established, you know, in the beautiful darshan of the lordships, that means we have advanced in Krishna consciousness. However, it's always however. However, we find that mind is very chanchalam. It's always wandering off. Arjuna tells Krishna in Bhagavad Gita that chanchala hi mana Krishna. Our mind is very, very chanchal. It's always wandering and it's very powerful as well. So how do I subdue this? How do I get him under my subjugation? Krishna tells it's possible. It is difficult. Krishna acknowledges Arjuna's view that controlling the mind is difficult. But he also says it is possible through practice. So, how do we, once we, you know, predominantly, you know, get that home page of Radha Vallabha in our mindset, then how do we protect it from losing it so that the other pages don't open up? Now, just as in our material home, we guard our home, you know, especially in this day and age now, you know, when robbery is quite rampant, especially if you are living in Western suburbs, you know, there is several instances of, you know, robbery and theft every day, you know, from people's house. So living, you know, in your own home becomes quite fearful, especially Indian houses. For the reasons that those potential thieves know that, for whatever reasons, you know, Indians tend to carry a lot of gold, you know, and all those things. They tend to keep it in their house, whereas the Westerners tend to put this in the safe, you know, in a locked away safe. But Indian homes have gold, so that's where they attack. You know, and this is, I'm saying this from what the police is saying. So Indian homes are being attacked, you know. So then what we do? We guard our home, you know. We put some security alarm, we put some security gates. Whatever arrangements we do, you know, so our home is guarded from the intruders. So just as how we guard our home from the intruders, similarly, now we have to guard our home page from intruders. You know, the page that continuously we want to be there, we have to guard it. Now how do we guard it? The problem with guarding our mind versus guarding the house, we see that it is more difficult to guard our mind than to guard our house. And I was thinking on this and I could put it into three different reasons. Guarding our house is difficult, but it is probably not as difficult as guarding our own mind, because we fail more times in guarding our mind than we fail in guarding our house. If anything, guarding our house, you can pay somebody, you know, subcontract it, get a security guard, get an alarm system, etc., etc., etc. But guarding the mind becomes very difficult. Why? And I put three reasons, I think, you know. The intruders that come in our mind are far more than the intruders that potentially come in our house. You get one break-in, you know, two break-ins. Sometimes you don't get any break-ins. We just have to be careful, but there is no break-ins. But our mind is break-in every, or very, very regularly. How regularly? You know, you can answer it for your own self. Introspect and answer. Not loudly. In your mind. So they are much more intruders in our own mind. And these days, of course, you know, with the what we call social media. We don't know whether it's actually social media or anti-social media. Because the social media generally makes a person anti-social. Because we are just locked into that screen. You know, not oblivious to who else is around us. So the social media, you know, bombards us with more and more intrusion. Illicit sex, gambling, meat eating, intoxication. Buy this, consume this, you know, and you'll be happy. So there's constant intrusions. You know. And what we also do, then, what we also find that this bombardment of intruders in our mind are quite more significantly deceptive than the other intruders in our house. No? The intruders of our mind, no? when the mind tells us, you know, to indulge in self gratification, It uses very deceptive and sweet words. Have you? You might have. Some of you might have had these realizations. How the mind can be very sweet talker. There's generally two dogs in our heart, as Radhanath Swami says. There's a good dog and a bad dog. But the bad dog can be also very sweet talker. It just entices us into doing some things. That we know, intelligence will say that this activity is wrong, but the mind sucks us in and almost forces us against our will to do that activity. And Chaitanya Charitamrita says, when the mind entices you to do that abnormal activity, the same mind then chastises you afterwards to say, why did you do it? So mind can be our best friend and our worst enemy, Krishna tells us. It can be our best friend and our worst enemy. So firstly, I said that the intruders of our mind are many. And then secondly, I said that the intruders are far more deceptive than the burglary that can happen in our own physical home. And the third reason is that we tend to be quite less vigilant with the intruders of the mind than compared to the intruders of the house. We are less vigilant. If anything, actually we welcome them. When the notorious thoughts come to our mind, we welcome them. Rather than showing them the red light, we show them the red carpet. Welcome to my mind. And voluntarily we become hostage of that intruder. So when people say we want freedom, we want to do anything, we want to say anything, we want to eat anything, we want to drink anything. Give me total freedom, because human right means freedom. What actually happens, if you analyze it, people become hostage to their own mind. For where is the freedom? What this does, this deceptive sweet words of the intruder of the mind, when it makes us hostage, it forces us from something that is impulsive to something that becomes compulsive. For example, if you take a cigarette smoker, the mind says, come, puff. You will feel like a cool guy when you smoke. You will have prestige in the society. Look how this teenager can smoke. So you smoke with style. Or you drink with style. See how many beers can he gulp, with one sip. You'll be famous. People will have, you'll have recognition. And being drunk, if you do something abominable, then you'll come on the front page of the newspaper. The Herald Sun will glorify, look at this, rascal. And people will start buying your autobiography and whatever. You'll become very famous. The mind tells all that. So the guy, the girl starts getting, sipping and drinking, and he gets addicted to it. So initially there is impulses. Impulse says, let me drink it, or let me smoke. And he smokes or he drinks. But then after some time, he knows that it's not good for him. So he tries to avoid, or at least cut down. So impulse means that he wants it. He wants to enjoy that sense gratification, but he knows that he can also control. When he wants to stop, he can stop. But compulsive means that when he doesn't want it, he still has to have it. So these are compulsive drinkers, compulsive smokers. When the realization comes that they don't want to smoke anymore, they still cannot give away that addiction because it's compulsory. The smoke catches them rather than them catching the smoke. So they become the hostage of their own mind, which sweetly talked them into smoking and drinking and any other activity for that matter. So where is the freedom? They've become the captive of their own mind. Chaitanya Charitamrita gave the example of there was this gentleman who wanted to drink. And again, from an impulsive drinker, he became a compulsive drinker. So one midnight when he woke up, he was so desperate to, drink, but he knew it's not good for him, but he just couldn't control it. And this is midnight, every other person is, and the dog is sleeping. So he couldn't find any alcohol in his house. Then he steps out to go to the bar, that could be open. And he went there, and his favorite drink was not there. So then he said, I'm going to go and find my favorite drink, because he was just so eager, to get that. So then he started walking on the street, and he walked for, miles away from his house. This is in the midnight. And then finally falls into the gutter, in the darkness of everything. So then this man finally gets the realization that, I wanted freedom, but actually freedom to drink, But actually what has become, that I've become hostage of somebody else. No? I'm being pulled out of my own house at midnight by some force that I'm not even cognizant of. No? And now when everybody else is happily sleeping, I'm roaming around on the bed, on the streets like a nomad, not knowing where am I going and what am I doing. So how am I freedom? How am I free? I'm captivated by something. I'm hostage. I'm an imprisoner to something that is higher force than me. Of course, that's when we need to appear on the scene and tell him how to control the mind. You know, my dear devotee, or not devotee, my dear alcoholic, what will you tell him? You know, if you find somebody who is heavily addicted and fallen in the gutter, what Krishna consciousness advice will you give him? Have some prasad at midnight. What else? Chant the holy name at midnight when he is drunk. What's the best advice to give him? What do you think? There's no right or wrong answer. I'm just opening in the room so that you know, I can also breathe. book at midnight. Do you think people don't buy the book at midday? You know, ask Philip Prabhu. You know? So midnight maybe might not work. Anyway, there's no right or wrong answer. You can try. I would probably start with the fact, you know, that please drink, but don't drink this much. In Hindi, there's a song, "Badi mahingi hai sharab, thodi thodi piya karo." In English, you know, it says that alcohol is very expensive. Drink little, little only, you know. So somebody who is fully drunk, you know, and fallen in the gutter, and the best advice you can give him is to drink, but drink less. And then once he starts drinking less, then you tell him to not to drink. And once he stops drinking, then you probably start giving him some prasadam. Okay, prasadam you can give any time, fair enough. But that's when you probably start handing him a book, you know, higher tastes. So something like that. You have to preach according to time, place and circumstance. You know. Asking somebody to come to Mangal Arati when he's fallen in the gutter, fully drunk, unlikely. That's when he probably goes to bed at 4 a.m. in the morning. So anyway, we have to, you know, preach according to time, place and circumstance. So I was saying that the mind becomes, you know, our addiction of sense gratification from impulse moves to compulse. You know? And we become so addicted that, you know, resetting the home page to Krishna consciousness becomes even more challenging. Yeah, that's where we are. But somehow or the other, if you are able to guard our Krishna consciousness home page, you know, then what is the result? The result is, Prabhupada explains us that, as I said previously, death for a devotee is not a termination of anything, but just a transition from one to the other. Similarly, initially I started with by saying that our concept of home can be very different, you know. One is our concept of home is our material home. The other perspective can be that, you know, there is a spiritual home where we actually originally came from, and that's where we actually need to go back to. You know? So the definition of home changes. You know? So our goal becomes going back to home, back to Godhead. Now when we actually firmly set our home page to Krishna consciousness, the home page of our mind to Krishna consciousness, then what also happens that our understanding of home yet changes again. From thinking that, you know, we need to purify ourselves to go back to home, back to Godhead, we start realizing that actually our eternal home can also be here. Krishna consciousness does not mean that our destination is Golok Vrindavan. And that's when our new home starts. That is true in one sense, you know, because that's where we all want to be. But devotional service means, becoming purified means, that rather than seeing that our destination is Krishna's world, our view of this world also changes, that we can be Krishna consciousness here. You see what I mean? No? This whole world can become our home. Srila Prabhupada wanted to build a house that was big enough for everybody to fit in Krishna consciousness. You know? So rather than seeing Krishna as, and I said this last time as well, you know, rather than seeing Krishna as our destination, that we will get him at the end of our bhakti journey, our mindset changes that Krishna is with us right now, right here. And he is my companion on this journey towards Krishna consciousness. You know. So we start feeling the presence of Krishna in our life, in our mind at every particular moment, you know, rather than at the end. So Krishna consciousness is not the end result of our journey. Krishna consciousness, the cause of our bhakti is our bhakti. So Rupa Goswami explains that the cause of bhakti is bhakti, and the product of bhakti is also bhakti. So we do bhakti here, and we continue to do bhakti when we are Krishna consciousness, whether we are in this world or in Krishna's world. Yeah. So our view of home changes to all encompassing that, you know, this place is also our home. This Malvan Mahaprabhu Mandir is my home. No? Okay, philosophically speaking, yes, we know that this place is, no, the material world is not spiritual. There is a spiritual world and there is a material world. But what we know, that this material, the things that are material are spiritualizable. Things that are material are spiritualizable. For example, now this, again, this Nalman Mahaprabhu Mandir, you know, is made up of rocks, sand, cement, wood, iron, metal, etc. So in one sense, you know, it's all made up of matter, but it is a spiritual place. You know, it has been spiritualized because of the presence of Srila Prabhupada and the presence of their lordships, you know. So something material becomes spiritual. So our mindset starts accepting, you know, that this is actually our home, rather than a home where we are just doing, you know, non-Krishna consciousness activity. So we get the realization then, when we get type of realization that our Krishna consciousness is right now, right here, you know, bhakti is right now, right here, and Krishna is with us in our heart as the Paramatma, we get the realization that the Lord is so merciful, the Lord is so merciful that He is willing to embrace us at our pace and at our place. The Lord is so merciful that He is willing to embrace us at our pace, at whichever pace we want to travel, and at our place, whichever place we are in. We don't have to travel anywhere to get Krishna consciousness. We can be Krishna consciousness wherever we are. And we saw this in the past times of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, when he was intentionally meditating, you know, in the sixth month of his sadhana, he got the darshan of the Lord in his heart. He had the full darshan of the Lord in his heart. But all of a sudden, he saw, the darshan of the Lord stopped. You know, he couldn't see the Lord, you know, in his meditation, in his heart anymore. So being so highly perturbed, you know, he opened his eyes out of, you know, being perturbed why the Lord has disappeared. So when he opened his eyes, whom did he see? The Lord in front of him. So what he saw was, what he was seeing inside his heart in his bhakti, he also saw the same personality right in front of his eyes when he opened his eyes. So he had the realization, you know, that the heart is his home of the Lord. You know, the heart is the home of the Lord. The Lord is always with us. So Krishna was ready to embrace Dhruva at his place, which is Madhuvan. Not that Dhruva had to travel to the Vaikuntha planets to be able to see the Lord. Of course, at the end we know he went there. But from where he was, he got the darshan of the Lord. You know. So our home can be anywhere, you know, as long as there is Krishna consciousness. But so far, you know, what I have said is that Dhruva Maharaj is returning home, and this home can have different perceptions depending on how we see it. One, we have a material home, then we have our spiritual home. Our mind is also the home, you know, where we can put the home pages Krishna consciousness. And the effect of this is, once we are, our default mind is Krishna consciousness, then we get the purification, satisfaction and illumination, and we get the darshan of the Lord. You know? So just as we have to guard our home, we also have to guard our mind, you know, from the intruders. What we also realize as sadhakas, then it is, for how long can we continue to guard our mind? Time to time we slip. Time to time we fall. So for how long we will be able to guard our home? That's when, personally speaking, no, taking the shelter of the lordships becomes very, very important. For me, generally, the most of my time goes in front of Nityananda Prabhu. When I'm looking for some shelter from the turbulence of the mind, then Nityananda Prabhu tends to be the most the deity that I go to the most in terms of getting some strength to fight on the turbulent mind. Nityananda Prabhu, of course, we know he's no different from Lord Balaram. And if you see Lord Balaram, and this is my philosophical reasoning for my attachment, whatever attachment I have to Nityananda. Lord Balaram has got two aspects, Bala and Rama. So when we are struggling to fight with the chanchalam mind, with the turbulent mind that continuously tries to open the anti-devotional pages, and we want to have the home page of Krishna consciousness, then for me to get that strength to fight that battle is the Bala from Balaram. Bala means strength. So Lord Balaram gives us the strength to fight on. That's why he is carrying that plow. What do you call that plow in Hindi? Hal. He's carrying that hal or the plow. So with that plow, what he does, he makes the soil. The plow is used by a farmer to make the soil fertile so that agriculture can be established. So make the soil fertile, conducive to growth of plants. So Lord Balaram is like that plow carrying personality that plows the heart of a devotee, of a person, that makes the hard-hearted into soft-hearted. He just plows it so that the weeds can be removed. Because for Krishna to arrive, what do we need? For Krishna to arrive in our heart, Krishna is already in our heart, but for us to be able to perceive that Krishna is actually manifesting in our heart, we need the heart to be cleaned. Cheto darpanam marjanam. The heart has to be cleaned. And Balaram does that job of cleaning for us, when we are surrendered to him. Because he is plowing the heart. The hard-hearted becomes the soft-hearted. So when that Bala comes from Balaram. That strength of fighting on comes from Lord Balaram, Nityananda. And when time to time, we find that, yes, the strength is coming and we are fighting off, anything that's anti-devotional service and we are progressing our Krishna consciousness. But for us sadhakas, how long can we continue to fight? We can fight the intruders, but how long can we sustain to fight? Then at that time, again my own personal experience of trying to take shelter of Balaram is that I said Balaram has got two aspects, Bala and also Rama, and Rama means enjoyer, enjoyment. So Lord Balaram is so merciful that he prepares the devotee's heart for the arrival of Krishna. Lord Balaram prepares the heart of the devotee for the arrival of Krishna through Bala and through Rama. Through Bala, he cleanses the heart of the defects of the anartha. Anartha nivriti happens. And then he also gives the ruchi. Because Rama means ruchi, the pleasure. So Balaram tells us that, my dear devotee, when you are fighting off, if you are not able to fight off, I'll give you the strength to fight off. And even if you don't want to fight off, don't worry. Just enjoy the bliss of Krishna consciousness, which I'll bestow you through my Ram aspect. And we know that when there is, Srila Prabhupada tells us that for us to be Krishna consciousness, our focus is on the higher taste. Param drishtva nivartate. Krishna tells us that our higher taste, our Krishna consciousness, we rather than being too, what's the word I was looking for? I noted it down. Yeah, rather than being too focused on rejection, we concentrate on acceptance. So rather than rejecting the pages that are opening up, we have to accept Krishna consciousness that is there, and focus on the Krishna consciousness home page. So param drishtva nivardate, higher taste. Once we get the higher taste, Prabhupada explains us, then the lower taste will automatically go away without any extraneous endeavor. And we have that realization, correct? A lot of us gave up the anarthas just because of the higher taste in Krishna consciousness. Definitely nothing beats prasadam. Nothing beats prasadam.
even if it's just a simple khichdi made, but it is just far more satisfying and, you know, delicious than probably the most opulent, you know, food that, you know, even if you can, one can go and buy in Crown Casino. It's just not, there's no comparison. No. When we serve prasadam, the queue is very long. No. And people are happy, maybe not happy, but possibly happy to wait for hours. Sometimes we see some push and shove, but that's all part of the game. But generally, you know, we see queues that are 1 hour long, but still people are lining up to get there, you know, the mercy of the Lord. So prasadam is very attractive. So when we get that ruchi, the taste in prasadam, then the lava taste of, you know, Helga's bread and, you know, Domino's pizza and all that gradually, naturally go away without any, you know, extraneous endeavor by a devotee. So the Lord Balaram gives us that higher taste through which we can fight off the lava taste, you know. So Bala and Rama, you know, multifaceted, mercy from the Lord. So Prabhupada, as I said, you know, told us, rather than rejection, we should focus on replacement. Rather than being too focused on rejecting the anarthas, be focused on replacing it. Our emotions cannot be terminated. Our emotions just has to be dovetailed into the service of the Lord. So replace the inferior desire with something that is superior desire. Because desires do come. As those unwanted pages open up in the browser, similarly these unwanted desires come in our mind. So temptations will come, but we don't have to say welcome. Temptations will come. Even temptations come for the pure devotees. Temptations come even for the pure devotees, what to speak of us. But the difference is that when the temptations come for the pure devotees, they reject it completely, immediately. Without much effort, they just reject it. When the temptation comes for a new devotee, the new devotee completely accepts it. So see, there's a rejection and acceptance. You know, temptations are flowing, like the rivers flowing into the ocean. But the pure devotee rejects the temptation, the neophyte devotee accepts the temptation and gets indulged in that sense gratification. At our level, what can we do? Now, what is probably possible for us to do, speaking for my own self, you know, the best method seems to be, when the temptations come, we can say that, wait for a while, I'll come back to you later. So just procrastinate it. You buy time. So when it's so hard to control, then you say, wait, my dear friend, you just wait, rascal. I'll come back to you a little bit later. I'll attend to you a little bit later. So at least just procrastinate it. So rather than accepting and rejection, there's a middle ground of acknowledging it, but they're just car parking it. You know? And by that time, after some time, the thought might completely disappear. You know? Hopefully with Krishna's mercy, the thought completely disappears. So we find that our Krishna consciousness, you know, it's we fight this battle of establishing, you know, the homepage of Krishna consciousness through the strength from the Lord, through the sweetness of Krishna consciousness is there. Bhakti, generally we know, is the quickest way. Bhakti is the quickest way to achieve perfection. And we also learn that bhakti is the easiest way to learn, to get purification. Bhakti is quickest and bhakti is easiest. And thank God that bhakti is also the sweetest. We don't have to worry about, you know, sitting in, you know, in one asana in meditation for so long with the eyes half closed, concentrating on the nose tip, you know, living in a forest and all that. No, all those austerity we don't have to do. Krishna consciousness is the easiest, the quickest, and the sweetest. And we have got these realizations, you know. Or at least the sweetness of prasadam is there, our realization. The sweetness of dancing in kirtan is there, is our own realization. The sweetness of taking darshan of the Lord, especially at 4:30 a.m. or 7 a.m, no, we have got that realization. Because it's just so attractive, you know. When the Lord chips open, you know, darshan opens up, we are immediately captivated, you know, by that beaming effulgence and exuberance that's just being pervaded in the temple room. So that lifts us to another level. So this is what I'm saying, you know, the Rama aspect of Balarama teaches us how to fight with the lava aspects of the unwanted intruders. So Dhruv Maharaj, and I'm summarizing now, or I'm concluding, I guess. Dhruv Maharaj, and I'll open for questions thereafter. So Dhruv Maharaj, when he was insulted by his stepmother, he left for the forest with the aim of taking revenge, being a Kshatriya, and wanted something that is bigger than his father, so he can, you know, show off, not show off, but I guess take revenge. Now, when he's returning home, he's a completely different person. His motivated approach towards the worship of the Lord has changed him and purified him so much that he's a pure devotee, full of humility. So his his desire to take revenge has completely vanquished. Devotional service is purifying us. So he's totally vanquished now. You know, he's completely a clean-hearted person. You know, from being so revengeful, he's become a light-hearted person. You know, from being heavy-hearted, after lighting the torchlight of Krishna consciousness, he has actually become a very light-hearted. So for devotees, when we want to feel light-hearted, we have to let go of our anarthas, for our ego and our pride. So, I was also saying that Dhruva Maharaj is now a completely different person because he is not revengeful either towards his stepmother or his brother or, you know, his father, anybody. You know, he's a pure devotee now. And the analogy that comes to mind is, you know, when we squeeze an orange, what will come out of it? What juice? Orange juice. When we squeeze a grape, what comes out of it? Grape juice. Why doesn't something else comes out of orange? Why doesn't grape juice come out of orange and orange juice comes out of grape?
Because that's
what's inside. What is inside is what is coming outside. What is inside is coming what's outside. So now when you see Dhruva Maharaj, now before and after analysis, before Krishna consciousness, what was coming out of him was what was inside him. Our words and our action are disposition of our mind. Our words and our actions are disposition of our mind. So what is inside was coming out, that I want a kingdom that is more opulent. I want to take revenge. After impact of Krishna consciousness is what? I don't want this palace at all. No, I was so silly to ask for a palace from the Lord. And I was so silly to even be so angry at my parents or stepmother and father. So what it was inside is how it went out initially through the purification. Now that humble attitude of a pure devotee is naturally exhibiting in his actions and words, that I don't want all this. So for us, is the takeaway, I guess, is same. What is inside us will always come outside. So it's very important to work on our internal aspect as much as we exhibit ourselves with our external behavior. So, with that kind of purification, satisfaction and illumination, we become eligible to go back to home, back to Godhead. And that home can be in Vaikuntha planets, can be in Golok Vrindavan, or it can actually even be here. We can be fully Krishna consciousness even in the material world, as was shown by Srila Prabhupada, fully Krishna consciousness wherever he went. He went to most of the, notorious places, degraded places, and he also made them into Vaikuntha. Because what was inside him came out. So it's very, very important to have our home page rightly set to Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? I've got 5 minutes.
What is happening in the heart of King Uttanapada?
So Mahatma Prabhu has asked, what is happening in the heart of King Uttanapada? You came maybe 10 minutes late, so that's why I was talking about it. That Uttanapada, he got his realization that it was his mistake of not protecting his son. He was very remorseful and he felt very despondent, that he had led to Dhruva Maharaj leaving the palace for the forest. And if you look at the verse of the day, what he is saying is that, that I'm a wretched soul. It is because of my doings that Dhruva had to go. And when he gets the news that Dhruva Maharaj is now returning home, he is not able to put faith in the message. Because he's saying, I'm so wretched. How can such a good fortune befall on a notorious person like me? So he's not able to reconcile it. But he's thinking back that Narad Muni had told him that rest assured, Uttanapada, your son is on a glorious path and he will come back as a magnanimous soul. So just wait. But after the counseling of Narad Muni, 6 months has passed. With time, the faith has probably diminished. So now he's not able to reconcile to the fact that Dhruva Maharaj is actually indeed going to come. Of course, we fast forward, to a few weeks of more Bhagavatam unfolding. We see that Uttanapada is tremendously favorable towards his son now. For that matter, even his stepmother, Surichi, who had child abused Dhruva, even she is so favorable towards Dhruva, a good takeaway again for us, when one person becomes a devotee in the family, the impact ripples to the family members automatically. You know? So here Dhruva Maharaj becoming a pure devotee has led to the heart of Suniti, Surichi and Uttanapad and Uttama all being purified because they are Agyat Sukriti has been established. You know? So they are all very, very favorable and we see how beautifully they decorate the palace to welcome Dhruva. You know? And Suniti also, Surichi also welcomes Dhruva with a very clean heart. And Dhruva is also very, no more inimical towards Suruchi for having, you know, blasted him, insulted him. And we see it many times happening. You know? From crisis, somebody has led to Krishna. You know? Dhruva Maharaj's pastime is from crisis to Krishna. He converts a crisis situation into Krishna consciousness through the art of Narad Muni's, you know, good counseling. So when we are going through, you know, tough times, somehow or the other we have to take it as the mercy of the Lord who is trying to teach us a lesson so that we can become purified and increase our dependency on Krishna. Prabhupada tells us that troubled times are times to be seen as benediction of the Lord for the devotee to purify himself and take more and more dependence on Krishna. Hard to do, easy to say. Philip, you had a question, and I'll stop there.
Sometimes when we go out for preaching and we're making new devotees, and I know some new devotees, they understand what philosophy is theoretically. They also get some taste for service, but the material desire is so strong, and they can't give up their behavior, and then after that, they stop coming with this reason that they're too contaminated to come.
Too contaminated to come, okay.
So,
yeah. Okay, so Philip Prabhupada's question is, you know, that when we go on preaching, sometimes people take on Krishna consciousness, some with difficulty, some easily. But upon taking Krishna consciousness, sometimes we feel that those people start giving the reason that they are apprehensive of coming to the temple because they feel contaminated. Yeah? Did I paraphrase it correctly?
Yeah.
So they feel contaminated. Srila Rupa Goswami tells us in Nectar of Devotion, instruction, Nectar of Devotion, that bhakti is not dependent on anything. No. Bhakti is not dependent on time, place and circumstance. No. And the qualification, only qualification required for bhakti, only qualification required for Krishna consciousness is intense greed, lowlam. Intense greed, nothing else. So, if one feels he is impure, then there is not an blockage from him to continue Krishna consciousness. Of course, feeling impure is a good attitude. No. Generally, you know, when we come to Krishna consciousness, speaking for myself, generally, you know, when coming to Krishna consciousness means that, you know, we might think that we are pure, you know. But Krishna consciousness opens our heart and our mind and our vision to say actually how fallen and rascal we are, you know. Krishna consciousness teaches us that how fallen we are. Before that, we think we know everything, you know. But for somebody to already feeling that they are impure, you know, and therefore they cannot come to the temple is actually not such a bad mood. You know, it's a mood that's probably, you know, appreciable. Having said that, you know, we have to tell them that anybody is welcome, you know, to the process of Krishna consciousness, whether you are pure or impure. If anything, the reason to come to the temple is actually to get pure. You know, if they are feeling impure, then where else will you go to get cured? If somebody is sick, the reason to go to the hospital is what? Because somebody is sick. No. A person who is well does not need to go to the hospital, apart from visiting anybody, you know, that's another matter. But only a sick person will go to the hospital. So to say, because I'm sick, I don't want to go to the hospital because others might get sick because of me. No, my dear mate. The reason to go to the hospital is because we are sick. No. So the hospital will purify us. So similarly, temple, you know, the Sanskrit word for temple is mandir. No, Malvan Mahaprabhu, mandir. Mandir means what? You know? Mandir means somewhere where our man, which is mind, you know, can be established at the shelter of the Lordship, dhira. You know, mandhira. You know? So establish our mind. So because our mind is chanchalam, it is turbulent, it is disturbing, it is a rascal, it is an enemy, Prabhupada tells us, come to this hospital of mandir where the mind can be channelized into Krishna consciousness. Because the biggest cause of death at the moment is mental stress. No? Because people are disturbed. No? Sutta Goswami tells us that in Kali Yuga people will be disturbed. No? They will be distressed. They will be short-lived. They will be unlucky. They will be misguided. So we have to use mandir as a place to bring the mind under control, you know, through the process of mantra. Mantra means, man means again mind, and tra means, you know, to deliver. You know? So we come to the mandir, a place where we can take the shelter of the Lord using our mind, and then through that our mind will be delivered by the mantra of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So tell them they can come. And if nothing works, then give them parashadam. That will attract. Garantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Tagore Premanandi.